Case number four this morning is United States against Mazzecchi. Mr. Frankel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Scott Frankel. I'm the attorney for the defendant, the appellant in this case. We've raised several issues in our brief, but the issue that we'd like to address this morning concerns the introduction of 404B other bad acts evidence. The standard of review of the district court's decision to introduce this evidence is an abuse of discretion. We believe that the district court did abuse its discretion in allowing the government to introduce documents that the government had characterized as 404B evidence. As the rule states, 404B prohibits the introduction of character evidence to show conformity with activity subject to the current litigation. Both parties have cited essentially the same four-part test, which is well settled in the Seventh Circuit. First, that evidence is directed toward a matter, an issue, other than defendant's propensity to commit the charged crime. The other act must be similar enough and close enough in time to be relevant, and the evidence is sufficient to support a finding that the defendant committed a similar act, and the probative value of the evidence outweighs the prejudicial effect of the evidence. We believe that the documents at issue in this case, which were work documents that the defendant had at his home, do not satisfy any aspect of the four-part test. The documents labeled Winthrop Exhibits 2 and 3 were printout documents that were found in the defendant's apartment. The documents were work documents that listed credit card numbers and Social Security numbers that the defendant was working on at work. He worked for a medical billing and collections agency. The only bad act that the defendant might have committed in connection with having those documents was a violation of the company policy. There was no allegation in the trial court and never any evidence introduced whatsoever that the defendant had used any of the numbers, the credit card numbers or the Social Security numbers contained in those documents towards any bad ends. He didn't commit any crime with those documents. He certainly didn't commit any crime just in the mere possession of the documents in his home. In addition, we learned at the trial that the documents had some writing on the back of them, which may have also given an innocent explanation for why the defendant had taken the documents home. It's completely inconsistent with the government's position that he had brought the documents home to somehow steal the numbers and use them in some other criminal activity. The government.
So if we agree with you that this shouldn't have been admitted under 404B, then the question becomes, is this error a harmless error? And when we look at the totality of the evidence here, isn't that a problem for you?
We have raised an insufficiency of the evidence argument in our brief, and I believe that we set forth our contention that the evidence was insufficient. I don't believe that an error such as this is harmless in the context of this case because of the profoundly unfair prejudicial effect that the documents had on the jury in this case. And that is that since the only reason to introduce this evidence was his propensity evidence, the jury could only conclude that the defendant needed to be convicted to keep him from using all the credit card numbers that were contained in these documents towards some kind of illegal end. I think there's a good chance that the jury convicted only because they had these documents in front of them and that there may have been a chance of an acquittal if they hadn't had the documents. The government argued that the evidence was 404B evidence because it was it constituted proof of intent and knowledge, but of course the wrongful possession of work documents had no evidentiary value on the issue of intent in this case, where the case involved an international credit card scheme using credit card numbers overseas to purchase computer parts in the United States and ship them to other addresses in the United States. In addition, the government argued that the credit card, possession of these work documents, was evidence of knowledge of the larger scheme, claiming that the government had anticipated our argument that the defendant didn't have knowledge of the scheme. I can't imagine how these documents bore on the issue of the defendant's knowledge of the larger scheme. The only thing that he did was he brought them home. They had the rap lyrics scribbled on the reverse side, and they didn't have any relationship at all to the larger scheme. There was no showing, as I've already stated, that the documents had any evidentiary value whatsoever as far as the larger scheme goes. If there are any other questions on that point, I'm going to address the issue of whether the government violated Brady by not informing the defense of the existence of the rap lyrics on the reverse side of the documents.
Why did the defense need to be informed of something that, on the defense's view, the defendant already knew about? The theory about why these lyrics are material is the defendant could say, you know, the reason I had these papers was not for the credit card numbers on one side, but for the lyrics on the other side. Well, that's a defense only if that was the reason why the defendant had the papers. And then the defendant knew perfectly well why he had the papers. You don't have to disclose to the defendant the contents of the defendant's own mind, right?
Well, yes, Your Honor. But in that sense, I suppose that we're arguing in the alternative that if the defense didn't know...
Oh, so the theory is that these had to be turned over. They were exculpatory and material because if the defendant didn't know that they had it, this would enable him to mount a fraudulent defense.
Well,
that's not a normal theory of exculpatory evidence.
It would enable the defense lawyer to present a defense on his behalf based on the documents.
Even though the defense was not true.
Well, at the trial, the defense lawyer didn't know what was on those documents, didn't know what was in the defendant's mind.
He had only to ask his client.
That's probably the case in many criminal trials, Your Honor.
No. What Brady covers is evidence that was not in the defendant's hands. That is, it's evidence of third-party witnesses or evidence gathered from strangers to the defendant. I've never before seen a Brady argument dealing with the government has to turn over to the defendant something the defendant, by hypothesis, already knows about.
The hypothesis is presented in the alternative in the context of the other argument. At the trial, Your Honor, the defense lawyer didn't know that the documents contained the lyrics, and that was the problem.
If this was going to be a defense, if it was going to be anything other than fraud on the court, then the defendant himself already knew it, and there was nothing being concealed from him.
Your Honor, I understand your position and the point that you're making with regard to the Brady violation. We would just argue that the case of United States versus O'Hara that the government cited in its brief is distinguishable, as is the Gonzalez case, which the government cited in its supplemental submission regarding the wallet, which was where the defense attorney failed to inspect the contents of a wallet prior to going to trial. We don't think that either of those cases apply to our case. And for all those reasons, Your Honors, we'd be asking you to reverse the defendant's conviction.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Frankel. Ms. Scott.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel, my name is Kenyana Scott and I'm here for the United States. Mr. Frankel did not address the sufficiency of evidence issue, but I would like to take this time to acknowledge that he was correct in his brief when he stated that the government incorrectly stated that he did not raise his Rule 29 motion at the close of trial. We acknowledge and apologize for our oversight. I would like to address the 404B issue raised by counsel. The work-related documents that were introduced at trial contained Social Security numbers and the name and a credit card number of an individual. Defendant possessed those documents without authority from his employer. The overall scheme involved the use of credit card numbers to obtain fraudulently computer chips. These documents were found along with other raw materials of the charge scheme in the defendant's apartment. The government presented those documents as evidence of defendant's knowledge and intent of the overall fraudulent nature of the scheme. The district court gave a limiting instruction to the jury with respect to the documents of defendant's knowledge and intent, and the government did not, the government appropriately limited its use of those documents to prove defendant's knowledge of the credit card scheme.
But none of the information was used in this scheme that you were able to introduce, right?
Correct.
And the credit cards that were stolen were credit cards from the United Kingdom, not from the United States.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And so the credit card numbers he had were from Americans and not people from the United Kingdom.
That is correct, yes. But
so your position was that he was going to ultimately use these American credit cards, even though that hadn't been the pattern and practice before?
Well, our position was that he contained documents that he wasn't supposed to have, and those documents contained information that was similar to the overall charge of the scheme. We did not raise in our brief that he was going to use those documents to obtain new credit card numbers here in the United States, but they were found in his possession and contained sensitive information that was linked to the credit card scheme.
But it really wasn't linked, was it? It's just that they were numbers and they were credit cards, but there was no real link that you introduced. In other words, these credit cards weren't tied to anything, to ordering anything, or they weren't used in any way.
No, they weren't, yes, sir. With respect to the Brady issue that counsel raised,
Judge Easterbrook has already pointed out the problem, so are you going to reiterate what he told you?
No, position is...
I'd rest with his argument.
Sounds good. If there are any other questions the court has, if not, I will conclude and ask that you affirm the conviction and the sentence.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Scott. Anything further, Mr. Frankel? Well, thank you very much, and Mr. Frankel, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case. You've been helpful both to your client and to us. Thank you. The case is taken under advisement.